Roses are red, violets are blue. David Buchanan came home, so can you. Welcome to Phillies Therapy. Happy Valentine's Day. My name is Paul Boyer. Spring has sprung. There are flowers and birds chirping, and things are beautiful, buried under 7 or 8 inches of snow up here in northern New Jersey. Matt Gelb of The Athletic does not have that problem. He is my co-host. We are back for our third season of this already, if you can believe it, which is insane. I don't know what happens to time anymore, but it's 2024, baby. Camp is open. It's spring training. The pop of the mitt. The stretching of the ligaments. I don't know. Things are happening. It's great. It's a time we're celebrating and for apparently getting your thoughts in order. Let's bring in my co-host, Matt. Hi, I'm jealous of the weather down there. How are you?
I'm great. I appreciate that we're so on brand with a poem for David Buchanan. I saw numerous people tweeting at me and you after that signing was announced, yeah, saying, can there be an emergency pod to talk about David Buchanan? And got a chance to say hello to David Buchanan today. It's a cool thing. I did not realize actually that there's a lot of little details in it that make it even better. It's like, he met a girl in Easton, when he was pitching for the Iron Pigs years ago, and he married her and they now have two kids. And so now they're he's been overseas for years now. I mean, he pitched in South Korea for the last 4 years, Japan before that, but now they're building a house, in the Easton area.
Really?
And most likely, he'll be pitching in AAA for Lehigh Valley. If he has a decent spring, goes to AAA and pitches in the rotation. It's really cool. I think it's neat to see a guy come kind of full circle. And, he made one of the worst starts in Phillies history. He once allowed 11 runs an inning, and he's one of our, famous rebuild characters. And I think it's cool that he's getting to see it from this side, even though he probably won't factor into anything that matters about the 2024 season. We can still have fun with it, right?
Yeah, no, it's great. It's so funny how with some of these guys, and David Buchanan, for those of you who need a very quick crash course, seventh rounder in the 2010 draft, is now
Jesse
coming
Biddle
up.
Draft.
Yeah, is now coming up on his 35th birthday. Atlanta, Georgia native. Last pitch for the Phillies, 2015, had ostensibly a 7 ERA. But his last game at the end of the 2015 season against the Marlins, take that for what it's worth, 6 2/3, 7 strikeouts, a walk, 1 Ernie. And then that was it. That he ended his season on that note to keep his ERA at 6.99, just below that 7 mark. But now he comes home. And I don't know. I think that's cool. I like it when, it's not quite. It's a different kind of thing than I felt for Scott Matheson. You remember Scott Matheson leaves the Phillies organization and Major League Baseball, goes overseas and becomes an absolute star in Japan. He's like a national legend over there. The guy went on an absolute roll and never came back to the States. But now we have a guy who's following in that like Miles Mikolas, Colby Lewis kind of thing, where they leave for a couple of years and now he comes back. He was really good over there, but he's coming back to the States. It does. It feels like a homecoming. It feels like something that deserves some kind of happy ending. And I look at his number, 4 home runs allowed in 188 innings.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're really going to find out how the quality of baseball is in the Korean baseball league. I don't know what it is. What is it formally called?
KBO.
Korean baseball organization?
Organization, yeah, I think, yeah.
I guess we're going to find out a lot about the quality of baseball because he put up some great numbers there the last years. I think he's a guy who's assigned to go pitch at AAA and give them some innings at AAA because they could use that. So
yeah,
it's cool when you can give that to a guy who, you have a long history with in your organization. And as a guy who has seen, he's seen some shit.
Yeah. So, you mentioned depth, you mentioned the rotation. Depth overall is kind of an interesting focal point for this team as we enter this spring. They are once again, top heavy. No one doubts the star power, but once you start getting into the reserves, the cavalry, the potential replacements, things start to get a little interesting. They made a couple of moves recently, flexing some of that low $1 million muscle with split contracts to land the likes of Colby Allard, now Spencer Turnbull most recently, guys who are expected to compete for the last spot in the bullpen, you know, like the Dylan Covey, Nick Nelson memorial kind of spot. And there are different option statuses to consider throughout this whole thing. But basically, the Phillies needed to get a little bit creative. And you've written about this in a couple of your stories, and you've mentioned this. They don't have the playing time to offer a lot of guys who are left on the fringes of free agency right now, especially in the outfield. You know, you've mentioned that there were guys that they were interested in who, you know, you can't really promise them full time because Johan Rojas is here and has the chance, the first crack at it with Brandon Marsh going to left. You can't promise guys a lot of starts because the rotation is basically set in stone almost right now. And the bullpen is also pretty full up. There isn't a whole lot of wiggle room right now, except at the very fringes of the bullpen and potentially in a six starter kind of swingman capacity. So now here we are signing some depth guys, getting to some churn moves. Churn, of course, being guys picking up on waivers and then the designation for assignment, the corresponding moves, basically the moves at the 25th and 26th spots of the roster and lower on down the 40. Matt, I think it's interesting what they're doing. It may not be the most inspiring names. You don't necessarily think of, you know, Colby Allard and Spencer Turnbull as stars, even though Turnbull, if I'm remembering right, had a really good start to his year last year before the wheels started to wobble a bit. But now here they are just adding guys here late on the eve, on the cusp of camp, to come in and compete for one of these last spots. And it's added in a camp that was otherwise looking to be not super intriguing or full of drama. I can't say it's full of drama now, but it's at least added some drama.
I mean, first of all, Spencer Turnbull allowed 12 runs in his first eight innings last year. So
I had
not
have
a good start to his year last
all
year.
Good. But, good to check on the old memory every once in a while.
Yeah, I mean, they've added depth, and they needed it badly, because if somebody gets hurt, and somebody will get hurt, it may not be in the spring, it may not be in April, it might be in May, but, you know, one of your starting pitchers will miss time, and it might only be a couple weeks, but they will miss time, and you need a sixth starter, you need a seventh starter, you need probably an eighth starter, mm-hmm. And I don't know that 2 or 3 weeks ago you could say that they really had a seventh or eighth starter, a viable one. And are Colby Allard and Spencer Turnbull viable? I don't know. I mean, the Phillies gave them both major league contracts when, you know, given their performance and their sort of service time and contract history, like they both probably are looking for minor league deals in a normal offseason, right? I mean, Turnbull, even in the minors last year, you know, had almost a 7 ERA. He was not good last year. But the Phillies give him $2 million and, you know, hope that he'll accept. I do believe there's some language in the deal where, you know, he does have a certain amount of service time where he can reject or refuse an optional assignment. But I believe that by paying him $2 million, which the Phillies can do, that they'll get him to take the optional assignment. And you know, if he does not make the team, I guess at this point, you're kind of looking at Turnbull versus Dylan Covey for the long man role. I know that'll make people happy, I think, because people don't like Dylan Covey. So, you know, here's some competition for Dylan Covey. And yeah, it's like, not to minimize like 6 weeks of spring training, but yeah, like that's kind of what they're looking at. It's like, should we carry Spencer Turnbull or Dylan Covey as the long man? And it shouldn't be a very dramatic spring, barring injuries, and they hope it's not dramatic. I mean, they're really just looking for everybody to stay healthy this spring. That's pretty much the priority. It's about accumulating depth, and it's like, you know, I hate using that word because I feel like it kind of, people see it and your eyes just gloss over because it's talked about so much. And you know, think about all those years though where like the Phillies, we would say, well, I mean, look, they have gotten some good, you know, they have a talented roster, they have some stars on this team, but they just could not support those stars. And like we saw it even at the end of the last great era, you know, the 2012, 2013, 2014 Phillies, in which, yeah, they were clearly fading and mm-hmm. you know, on the end of that era. But, you know, they really failed to support the edges of that roster. They just were running guys out there that should not have been out there when there were injuries to other players, to starters. So I don't know if the rotation depth that they've acquired is good, but they have some of it now. I think that's a starting point. I think we've seen the Phillies pitching program, you know, really find a groove in recent years in terms of taking pitchers with certain characteristics and making them better, getting them in the strike zone more.
Yeah.
Maybe changing up their pitch mix, or, changing up grips, or, on some breaking balls to just really make them more effective and get the most out of them. And, perhaps by getting as many lottery tickets as you can here, maybe you pull one of them out and you make him better and you make him into a viable sixth starter in the majors. I don't think that's far fetched to suggest that they can do that this spring.
Yeah. It's sort of a leap of faith for me. If I'm unfamiliar with a guy's game, right? Spencer Turnbull, obviously I completely forgot the start of his season for starters, but I'm not really up on what he does, what his game is. I did not watch a ton of Tigers baseball last year, and I've just kind of poked around looking at him from a really high level just to kind of get a lay of the land. It's sort of a leap of faith from that perspective to believe that the Phillies have a plan here, right? That they have something, that they have their eye on a particular fix, a particular pitch. Maybe they want to start spamming something more. Maybe they have a grip adjustment. I don't know. The details and the adjustments are on such a fine biomechanical level now that it really laps what is publicly available that I've seen anyway. So I just sort of have to be like, okay, here's what I think they're looking at. Here's an idea of what they might be going for, and then see if whatever changes they actually try and apply actually work. So it is a bit of a leap of faith. And it's also, again, like with all of these things, not my money. You think you have a fix and you want to pay this guy $2 million because you think it'll work. Okay. Yeah, go for it. Sure. This is a team that needed innings, right? Like, roughly speaking, you got to cover 1400, 1500 innings in the course of a full season. And you don't have five starters pitching 200 anymore. Nobody does that. So you got to have a lot of arms to go through. And if this is the way you got to do it, then this is the way you got to do it. It's creative. It's flexing some of that financial muscle in a completely opposite way from the Trey Turner deals and the Bryce Harper deals. You're not going nine figures, you're going seven figures. You're going low seven figures, in some cases even lower than that, if they don't pitch enough time in the major leagues this year. But it's creative, and I like it. If that's what you got to do, then do it.
Yeah, and let's call for what it is, though. I mean, they've had to be creative because they really haven't done a great job developing it from within.
It's a shame, man. It is.
The Chris Sanchez story, and we'll see how he does in 2024. But the 3 to 4 months that he put together last year as a starter, after some legitimate changes they could point to in terms of repertoire and also just developmentally in the minors, that was a big success for them, a huge success. And they haven't had successes like that in recent years with starting pitchers, and they're not the only organization. I think it's pretty clear that developing good major league starting pitchers is really hard right now. But the Phillies just had very little at AAA, and even if we want to count AA too, I mean, the upper minors depth, not just in rotation, but the rotation sticks out. It's lacking. I mean, there are very few guys in AA and AAA this year who you can be like, oh, I think this guy can legitimately, reasonably help them out in the majors if there's a need. Mm-hmm. There's just not a lot. Yeah. And so because they've had some, gaps in player development, they have to do it this way. And it's forcing them to be creative, because typically you're able to develop a fourth outfielder or a sixth or seventh starter or, a sixth reliever from within. And they haven't necessarily been able to do that on a consistent enough basis, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Yeah.
Because they've had guys. I mean, they've had, Matt Vierling and Nick Maton turned into, a solid late inning reliever in Gregory Soto. I mean, they've had guys, depth guys, kind of those pieces. Like Connor Brogdon, I know, is kind of on the bubble right now. But, I mean, Connor Brogdon was, an effective big league reliever for a little bit. He was homegrown. They just haven't had enough of those kind of successes from within. And we're not talking about developing stars all the time. But those guys who help you out during the 6 month regular season, some of them have to come from within, and they just haven't had a ton.
Yeah. It's sort of the unfortunate point where you try and pick up on some of these guys who are, maybe ascendant complex guys who come over into full season ball, and you're like, all right, let's see what you got. And then the progression happens, and you just sort of forget about them. I do. I'll speak for myself. They kind of fall by the wayside. Guys who just can't make that leap, even to AA, like we're mentioning. I take a look at the depth chart right now, and this is, like, roughly speaking, there are some interesting names where prospect heads will tell you, like, all right, yeah, that's probably somebody to watch out for. You know, there might be something happening there. I'm talking about guys like, you know, Samuel Aldegari, Jaden Estanista. Like, you go really far down, and they're rookie ball guys. You know, we're A-ball guys.
A-ball, yeah.
You know, you look at the higher level stuff. There's, you know, bringing David Parkinson back in AAA. Mm. You have to hope Griff McGarry can get rebuilt. You know, can Mick Abel make the leap? They both had, you know, those last two guys especially, they both had, you know, rough spots as they ascended into the higher minors. And then, you know, the AA depth chart, as I'm looking at on Fangraphs right now, is not full of name brand guys whose names I've barely even seen before. You have Mitch Neuborn, who was sent to the AFL, and then you get into the likes of Matt Osterberg and Victor Vargas and Jordan Fowler, and they're new names to me. They haven't stuck out. Even somebody who's interesting, like Alex McFarland, underwent Tommy John surgery recently, so he'll be out for a while. And there's not a lot there. It's unfortunate, because I think for all the other things that they've done right at the major league level, they've done a really good job supplementing. Clearly, you make two straight NLCS trips and one World Series trip, you are doing something right at the major league level. It just hasn't been followed up with that internal part that so many of these executives talk about having. In order to build consistent, sustained success, you need to have that pipeline. You need to have that system to back it up, to back up all the big signings. You can't keep buying to fill every hole. And it's, you know, that's not really filling in right now.
There's a gap from some really bad years of drafting and developing. I mean, I think that's pretty clear. It's part of why there was a regime change. Yeah. And when there is a regime change like that, you know, those mistakes in drafting and developing don't just get, you know, fixed overnight because there's a new regime. I mean, they're going to linger. And I think we're seeing that. I mean, it was funny because I was, I don't know why I was going over this today. Jake Mintz, who now works for Yahoo Sports, congrats to Jake on the new job. He was here in Phillies camp today. And we were talking about that Demoniac draft. And I clicked on the Demoniac draft. And we all know, you know, that draft did not go well for the Phillies. But do you know that there's one player from that draft in which the Phillies had the first pick in every round? One player from that draft in 2016 who's still in the organization. Do you know who it is?
Wow. Oh, this is a tough one, because I remember the likes of like JoJo Romero.
Yeah.
And I think, so that was Derek Halsier. Wasn't that Derek Halsier?
Yes.
Okay.
Hall is the last player.
Okay.
Still in the organization from that draft. And that was a draft where it's like, yeah, I mean, like, you want to hit on the first pick, but you also get the first pick in every round. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say you're going to hit on every player in every round. That's just not how the baseball draft works. But, you know, you're hoping you get, you know, something out of that. And I guess Edmundo Sosa, they got him out of JoJo Romero. So,
yeah,
you know, that was a trade with the Cardinals. But, you know, Moniak got them World Series hero Noah Syndergaard. But, like, you know, it's just – that draft, and, you know, the next year was the Hazley draft. I mean, there's just there was just a couple bad drafts there that really lingers with you now. I mean, it really lingers, and that's what they're seeing, I think, at the upper level of the minors.
Yeah, I've gone and pulled up the 2016 draft now, and I'm looking at it. It reminds me that the Philly second round pick, Kevin Gowdy, he just signed with the Dodgers, which of course makes you think, uh-oh, what do they know?
It keeps going. I mean, like, 2019, sure, they drafted Stott in the first round, but every pick after that, nothing. I mean, there's not even guys that they used in trades. There's just a lot of nothing. And so, you know, there's like four solid years of drafting there where, they're feeling it. They're feeling it in the upper minors right now.
Well, and I mean, this was a refrain back in the early to mid, you know, 2010s, late 2000s, even with the Phillies and their first round picks. This was a thing before, in between Cole Hamels, and you can't really count JP Crawford, because he didn't give the Phillies a lot at the major league level. Like, you know, he was shipped off in a trade and only really blossomed once he got to Seattle. But in between Hamels and Crawford, we'll say, so from 2004 to 2012, with some pick forfeitures in the middle there, they got nothing from their first round picks. You know, Travis d'Arnaud never played a game for the Phillies. He was traded in, you know, for a trade.
Yeah, they got obviously him. Yeah, they got Roy Halladay. That helped.
But then, but then you look at the likes of, you know, Adrian Cardenas, who, you know, no, he was kind of a a helium guy who some of a deep cut was like, oh yeah, okay, maybe he'll do something. First round pick Joe Savory, two-way player before, you know, the age of Shohei, the proto Shohei Ohtani, who did more for Oakland than he ever did, you know, for Philadelphia. Jesse Biddle, okay. Anthony Hewitt, Zach Collier, Larry Green, Mitch Geller, Shane Watson, they never made the majors. You know, and that was a thing that you always pointed back to. You're like, man, it really would have been nice to have some hits higher in the draft there. Then you have Crawford.
Right, and where did, and right. And where did they start seeing that? They started seeing that in 2012, 2013, 2014.
Right.
You know, when things started to go bad. And what's the difference now? The difference is they've thrown as much money as they possibly can at every hole, at every problem they have. And mm-hmm. it's worked out nicely, right?
No, it's working very well. I'm very happy. I like this team a lot. Although I do think we're at the point now where if it doesn't work this year, there are going to be bigger changes. I don't know what exactly that's going to look like, but I just, it feels to me, if they can't get the job done this year, there's going to be far more turnover next offseason than there was this offseason. I'll just put it that way. That's the feeling I get right now. Maybe that means more money thrown at some other player and somebody gets shipped off. I don't know. We're not talking about that yet. The strategy has worked to this point. It's a successful run. This is a lot of fun. I'm still having fun. I'm enjoying this team. But there is a concern now. There is some depth problems. We're probably going to see a bunch of guys just over the course of the season have to step in, whatever position, whatever spot in the rotation or bullpen. And there's going to be some teeth gritting. We'll just have to get ready for that starting right now. One guy who we're not worried about once he is on the field, but you know, maybe we're a little worried about what his status is going to be moving past this year, is of course Zach Wheeler. We've talked about him before in our offseason check-ins leading into this camp. Matt, there's some thought now, potentially, that there's reason for optimism. I saw some quotes come out today that are publicly like, you know, Dave Dombrowski was like, yes, we've started talking about an extension. Zach Wheeler was like, yes, we love it here. We want to stay here. Everybody's saying the right things. Everybody's pushing the right hype buttons. Is that optimism founded? Or are we not going to have a revisiting of the Nola situation where he's just going to test the waters at the end of the year? Are we actually going to see Zach Wheeler get an extension before the season starts?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's possible. I think it's very possible. And you'll remember that I thought, you know, that a Nola deal would get done. You also remember that I basically pegged the number.
And it was amazing. Yes.
One spring ago, and they didn't get to that point. And I do think there are some differences in the Wheeler situation from Nola's situation. The biggest difference perhaps being that Wheeler has been to free agency already. Nola had not. Nola had never gone to free agency. And I think there was some desire to see, you know, maybe what other teams thought about him or envisioned for him. With Wheeler, I he's saying a lot of the same things that Nola said last spring. Philly's people that I talked to are saying a lot of the similar things they said last spring. And I do think there was legitimate optimism that they could get something done last spring, just like there is this spring with Wheeler. I do have a story that's up on The Athletic now, just, you know, obviously kind of going over like maybe some of the stuff that Wheeler said today, but also maybe with some, you know, a few details on how I think it might unfold and how it could unfold and how hearing that it might unfold. It's that, you know, there's been a real formula to a lot of these big money deals the Phillies have done in the last, you know, 5 years, right, Paul? What is it? It's their, you know, the term is longer maybe than we expect, and that's to get, you know, the annual average value a little lower so that they can, you know, kind of massage those tax bills, I guess. But if the players are open to it, the Phillies are fine with that. They're fine adding on a year or two at the end because, you know, money means nothing in 2031. And so
that's true.
I don't think that a Wheeler deal possible extension will follow that formula this time. Now there's differences here. I mean, Wheeler is 33. He turns 34 in May. And so, you know, he's older than most of the guys they've done these big free agent deals with. And so I do think that this has the possibility of being, and just from talking to people who are involved, you know, a shorter term deal with a higher AAV. the kind of deal that you give to a starting pitcher in his mid 30s, right? I mean, I almost feel like the Phillies would rather it that way. And I think Wheeler actually might rather it that way too. Because if he does have, you know, another decent, let's say they sign him to a 3-year extension that gets him through 2027, mm-hmm. and he'll be, I don't know, 37, 38. Maybe he's pitched well enough to go get himself another deal. I mean, so I think
that's true. Maybe.
I think both sides are like really enticed by the short term high AAV idea. I do think they're far, you know, they're not close right now. Like they're in the early stages of negotiations, and what happens in early stages, you know, one side has a big ask and the other side is like, "Eh, I don't know about that." And, you know, ultimately, you know, you meet in the middle, somewhere near the middle. Mm-hmm. And that didn't happen for about, I don't know, 8 months with Nola. It took that long for them to meet in the middle with Nola. Yeah. And essentially, right. They ended up meeting in the middle to where they were at. They each side made some concessions. I do think that there's, you know, there's a possibility that this just doesn't take that long with Wheeler.
You know, all of that makes a lot of sense to me. And especially the point about potentially seeing your way through to another chance at free agency in the later stages of your career, if you're Zach Wheeler. This is a guy who, relatively speaking, doesn't have a ton of miles on the arm still. He's still under 1,400 innings for his career.
Yep. Crazy, right?
You know, he's starting his age 34 year. The 2020 season was shortened, obviously. He missed some time in 2022 with injury. But for the most part, you know, in 21 and 23, he's been healthy. He's been dependable. You can say that, especially in his case, if we want to keep talking relatively, with how he came over, with what he was coming from. He was building off of his healthiest season to date when he reached free agency. But the track record in the book on him was that, you know, he had had some major injuries. He had missed two consecutive years and change, and then looked good, not amazing, coming into that free agency. And the Phillies bet on him, and they have scored enormously.
It's probably the best free agent deal for a pitcher ever, right?
Unbelievable. My God.
I wrote in my story that it might be one of the best free agent deals for a pitcher, like, in history or modern history. I don't know if it is the best, because I'd have to really dig into that. It's one of the best. I think it's fair to say, right?
You could be paying him $40 million a year, and it would be a good deal right now. Like, if you want to talk in terms of bang for buck, yes, absolutely. But the fact that they saw through, you know, to take that chance and feel good enough to give a 5-year guarantee for someone with, you know, the medical history that Wheeler has, I guess you could say, to bank on him that way. And not only has it paid off where he's, you know, say as good as he was his last 2 years with the Mets, he has far exceeded that. He's had playoff heroics like very few starting pitchers who have ever pitched for this organization have ever had. He's had some of the most big brass ball starts in the playoffs that he goes out there and he absolutely puts his foot down on these guys. And it's been tremendous. Yes. As far as I'm concerned, it is one of the best deals I've ever seen this team make. And it's hard to say otherwise, objectively or subjectively.
Do you think he's one of the 10 best pitchers in baseball right now? Or should I say starting pitchers?
That is interesting. Yeah, well, it's probably fairer to say starting pitchers. I think it really depends on what you value in a starting pitcher. I think there are pitchers out there who will have better rate stats, better rate performance stats. I'm talking about the likes of a healthy Shane McClanahan, who might put something together that, you know, puts him a tier above what Wheeler could do. But the fact that Wheeler has been durable enough over the last 3 years to go 150 or sometimes way more innings and still put up the quality that he does might not be quite the rate stats that some of the very top guys do, might not quite be Gerrit Cole. But it's in the conversation. I would not fault anybody. I'm not coming up with a list right off the top of my head just because I don't want to forget somebody and make it obvious. But I would think at first blush, instinctual answer would be yes. I would feel comfortable putting him among the 10 best starters.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. Yeah. Right now. Yes. Yeah.
And so at that point, you have to feel comfortable with that, with a 3-year deal.
Right. Right. And we're talking about, you know, Wheeler is still close with Jacob DeGrom, you know, one of his former Mets teammates. I think they, you know, they're really friendly and they talk a lot. And, you know, DeGrom got a deal that, you know, some would look at and say was a massive overpay. It was 5 years at 37 per year. Mm-hmm. And DeGrom has won Cy Young's. He's, you know, pretty, you know, I think pretty clearly has had a, you know, better career, I think, than Wheeler to this point.
Yeah, that's
of where he signed it. DeGrom was about the same age when he signed his deal that Wheeler will be after this season. Mm-hmm. So I'm using different comparison points here. But, you know, then again, though, if Wheeler signs for a few, you know, for a shorter term, you know, why not get to around that AAV number, 37? 36, 37. I think Garrett Cole's deal is 36 per, obviously much longer than the one that they would be signing Wheeler to. But I think that, you know, three times somewhere in the 35 to 37 per year range is not crazy and probably a decent deal for both sides.
I'd be fine with it. I am usually okay with things that get these guys paid. Look, it's all a matter of, do you think a 35 or 36 year old Zach Wheeler gives you a better chance to win over the course of a season than free agent X, who you could sign for a little bit less money?
And it's a good pitching market. It's a good market after the season, free agent wise. Corbin Burns, Shane Bieber, Walker Buehler, you know, the Verlander and Scherzer both could be free agents. You know, who knows? Verlander's already hurt again.
Yeah.
I'm thinking I'm forgetting somebody, but it's a pretty good free agent class of pitchers, you know, if you want to take that risk. But again, I do think, yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think both sides here are legitimately interested and, you know, have a path, I think, toward, you know, to getting something done.
That's good. I mean, I want this ride to keep going for as long as it can. I, like most people who are scarred by the early 2010s, would like to avoid a repeat of that. Of course.
Sure.
These are different players, right? And that core didn't have, you know, Bryce Harper.
Oh, Max Fried. Max Fried. I forgot Max Fried. Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's another guy.
Sorry to interrupt. But yeah, I mean, it's a good class.
Yeah. That's a good class. Maybe you want to skip that. Maybe you don't want to be one of that crowd, you know, like that's a buyer's market, right? That's good for the people who are interested in pitching to have people to pick from. I don't know what effect it would necessarily have on a difference in what his deal looked like, but maybe sure. That's not something you want to go through. I don't know. In any case, they've said the right things, right? Wheeler and Phillies manager, they've said the right things. They want to get something done. They're going to work on it. And hopefully they do, because I think this is a guy who right now, I would feel comfortable giving him 3 years and feel like in 2027, he could take the mound and still look like a major league caliber starting pitcher, one of the better major league caliber starting pitchers, even at a higher age for pitching, mostly because the tread is a little lower, but also because I feel like this team just has a good idea of how to use him, how to keep him healthy,
yeah,
and how to utilize his stuff to make him most effective. Like, the proof is in the pudding. He's taken off the last few years. So
it's, yeah. And that's the thing. It's a relationship that has worked, you know, not just one way. I mean, I think, you know, Zach Wheeler is clearly, you know, before he signed the deal, you laid it out, Paul, he wasn't necessarily this known commodity. There were a lot of questions about, you know, the rest of his career, but I mean, he has become one of, I think, the 10 best starters in baseball, and the Phillies have helped him. A lot of it's Wheeler. He has really made himself into a great pitcher. The Phillies have helped him get to that point, and he's aware of that. He's noted it numerous times.
So there's that. We'll keep an eye on that. You know, that's something I'll be waiting for. I will hold my breath for a little while. I won't be able to hold it for the full month. That's just,
I mean, if we're being totally honest, it really is like the only and biggest thing that can happen in the next 6 weeks. I mean, really, I mean, like, there are other things that could happen. There's fights for bench jobs and bullpen jobs. You know, I still think they're going to sign, you know, another utility outfielder, fourth bench type thing. Somebody who fits that description. I do think they will sign someone there. Uh-huh. But we're not talking about anyone crazy. And beyond that, beyond everybody staying healthy, I mean, like, signing Wheeler is, you know, pretty much the biggest thing that can happen in the next 6 weeks, I think.
Well, okay, so yeah, no Cody Bellinger, sure, fine. But a lot of people are starting to think like there's a dark horse thing with Jordan Montgomery, who's still a free agent. Maybe not Blake Snell quite as much, but Jordan Montgomery is still out there. Maybe there's a thought that the Phillies want to give him 2, possibly 3 years if he comes down to that point. Like, can you see something of that caliber happening? Or like, what's the threshold for that to work? Because again, the rotation is set right now. Somebody else would have to be moved in order to fit something like that. But Jordan Montgomery is a quality pitcher. He's a good pitcher. And if he fits their deal parameters, I guess, I don't know. Could something happen there? Do you think it gets to that point?
I think if he moves off wanting 6 or 5 years, then other teams get involved before the Phillies do.
Okay.
I think if he gets down to a 2 or 3 year deal, which I really do not think will happen, I'll be really surprised if he does. I think there will be other teams offering more money, and I don't think it gets to the Phillies price point. And it's not, and I don't know if it's about them being, I don't know if it's about necessarily also the about saving money. I think it's more, it's like how much you alluded to, Paul. It's like, who does he displace? It's like, okay, well, do we have to trade Taiwan Walker now? And like,
yeah,
what are we get? You know, we're probably eating some of his money to trade him. You know, what are we probably getting for him? And it just starts to get kind of messy. Now, all of a sudden you're spending, you know, whatever you're paying Montgomery plus whatever you're eating of Walker for a number 3 or 4 starter. And I don't know. I think he's a good pitcher, Montgomery. I don't know that he's like a huge, huge, huge upgrade for them. And I think that's why they've sort of stayed out of it while his demand or ask is, you know, for 6 or 5-ish years.
Yeah. I guess then that brings us to what possibly could have been a point of intrigue, but seems to be quelled. Dave Dombrowski doesn't really seem to want to entertain thoughts against this narrative, that the outfield could have used an injection of some kind of starting caliber player. Brandon Marsh is on the shelf for a little bit, but the expectation is, as of this moment, he'll be ready for opening day. We don't know what kind of ramp up he's going to have in the spring, when he'll be ready to take the field. Maybe he needs to start the year on the IL. Not quite
they
sure.
They're pretty confident the way they're talking. And I'm always skeptical about the way teams talk about injuries. So we'll see. But I mean, they've like unequivocally said he will be ready for opening day. So we'll see. But I sense some pretty, no surgeries are minor, but it does sound like it was a relatively minor surgery.
Do you know that? I don't know if I heard the context around it. Was it just when he was ramping up off season workouts? He felt a twinge.
Yeah. He felt something early last week, and then they looked at it, and it essentially, like, I guess was a piece of cartilage that had probably, been displaced a while ago, but had moved into an area of his knee where it was started bothering him.
Okay.
So it, while it wasn't like necessarily a recent injury, it's something that only started bothering him recently.
Okay.
If that makes sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, it does. I think it's important to shed a little light on, if he was hurt, why didn't he get this addressed earlier on? Well, it was probably because he wasn't doing the high intensity, get ready for the season workouts back in December. You know, like that's just one of those things. Nobody knew about it until he actually started moving that way. At least that's what I figured. And it's nice to hear that, you know, that's essentially what happened. All right. I think that about sets the stage, Matt.
You didn't ask me about the workout. People were asking, like, you know, Rob Thompson, like, who stood out on the first day of camp? And it's like, and Rob's just like, I don't know. Everyone is healthy. It's like, it's because like, it's like one day workouts, and they've been down here. You know, a lot of these guys have been here for, more than a week. Some guys, you know, multiple weeks. Thompson and a lot of the coaches have been here since like the 1st or 2nd of February. So while today was the first official workout, and you know, the players had to be here, pitchers and catchers had to be here by yesterday. There's been workouts happening for a while. And it wasn't even that long of a workout. It was a bunch of bullpens and some PFPs and, you know, really stimulating stuff.
Okay. So then that's the present. Let's look ahead a little bit. I know you have your eyes on on somebody this camp, somebody who's going to pique your interest during their appearances. Do you want to let that leak? Who's your camp crush?
And I'm going to get, every year I joke with Todd Zielecki and Matt Breen used to cover the Phillies for the Inquirer. I'd always have one or two guys, and they'd have one or two guys who for no real reason, become interested in spring training. And it's just kind of how you pass the time.
Sure.
I watched Michael Mercado throw a bullpen today. And he's
the guy from the Rays. Yeah,
he throws hard. He's a big guy. And I am fascinated to see him pitching games.
Michael Mercado.
He's very interesting to me.
Okay.
He's a reliever with options. Had a huge strikeout rate last year in the minors at AAA. This is the first, full year being a reliever. Rays need to add him to the 40 man. They, in Rays fashion, they didn't have, they had too many guys and not enough spots. And so they flip them. The Phillies didn't really send much of substance over. It was like Adam Leverett, who's not really ever been a prospect. So, maybe that tells us that Mercado is not really much of a, much of a guy, but I don't know. I'm intrigued. He's tall. He throws hard. Sign me up.
Okay. All right. And I guess I'll give one too, because the last couple of years I've been really hooked on, Matt Vierling and Nick Maton, which was kind of the sad part of seeing them go to Detroit. But for me, I want to see what Matt Caroon brings to the table, because he had such a crazy end to his year. He was just absolutely on fire, hitting the crap out of the ball. He's a little bit older, but now's your chance, man. I want to see what you got. I'm interested to see what Matt Caroon does when he steps to the plate. In addition to some other guys, of course, but I think I'm really going to be interested in Matt Caroon. All right, cool. So Matt, camp has begun. It's here. Baseball is back, baby. The Super Bowl is done. Baseball is here. We get games in a couple of weeks.
We somehow got a Joe Savory reference in a podcast on the first day of spring training 2024.
Look, if you're not hitting the ground running and you're not starting in prime form, don't even report. Don't even report to podcast spring training. All right. We're serious here. We take this very seriously with our guy remembering and name dropping. This is what we do. Oh, speaking of which, did you see that? Did you see that Corey Knebel is back?
Ah, yes. He had the bad surgery, the really bad surgery. He tore the capsule in his shoulder. That's the Johan Santana surgery.
Yeah.
It was a really bad injury he suffered. But, he didn't pitch at all last year. So he's in White Sox camp. And somebody made a joke that, was it you? Or somebody made a joke that he'll lead the White Sox in saves with 11.
Oh, no, that wasn't me. I think that was Rob Orr. From
very funny joke. I like
if I am remembering correctly, thank you. I'm humbled to be confused to Rob, who's doing unbelievable public analysis work.
White Sox, they're bad.
Corey Knebel's only 32.
Oh, do you know the Marlins still haven't signed a major league free agent this offseason?
I thought you were going to follow that up with ever, because it feels like they never sign anybody.
they have not signed a major league signed free agent.
It's not totally surprising. It's the Marlins.
Yeah.
What do you expect? Yeah. What do you want me to say? I'm not gonna say.
No, I just I was looking over the division again.
Yeah.
On my flight down. It's just weird. The Nationals have signed every first base DH type. They've signed both Joey Gallo and Jesse Winker this offseason, which is just tremendous.
Corey Knebel makes me think of, I briefly confused him with Brandon Kinsler in my mind, because I think Brandon Kinsler finished his career something 2 weeks shy of 10 years of service time or something like that.
Yeah.
And I saw Knebel got signed. He's finally going to get it. And Knebel's only got like 6 years. I don't know what I was thinking about.
I can't believe he's only 32. Wow. God.
Right. I feel like forever ago.
Yeah. Wheeler did. So Dave Buchanan, him signing, he is the oldest pitcher in camp. Before that, it was Wheeler. Wheeler was the oldest pitcher in Phillies camp, until they signed Dave Buchanan. But, it's crazy to me. I keep using the stat, in a few stories I've written of late, 'cause it blows my mind. The Phillies had the second fewest plate appearances last year by guys 33 or older.
Well, and that's why you got to feel good about running it back, right? Because it's not just that it's the same team, but pretty young. which is important. You don't want, you know, we talk about avoiding 2012 and 13 Phillies. You know, those guys were all in or approaching their mid or late 30s.
Yep.
And that is not the case here. That's just not the case. There's still a lot to go. A lot of baseball to be played by a lot of this team. A lot of good baseball. And yes, no, that blows my mind too. You don't think of the Phillies as a young team. You're so used to the Phillies being middle of the pack or older. And a team that usually spends in free agency gets attached to the thought of, oh, okay, now they're going to be aging. You know?
Exactly. That's the thing, is that this team mostly built through free agency. And, you know, most of these guys remain in their prime years, I think.
Beautiful. All right. Well, this is the longest wind down and outro I think we've ever had, which is saying something for us. No, it's good. Hey.
Wait, I want to say one more thing.
Oh, there we go. Dave, let's keep it going. Wait. All right.
Dave Buchanan had a great name drop of his own today.
Uh-oh.
Saying that before he came to Phillies camp, he heard from or checked in with Mario Hollins, who he used to live with.
Oh, my God.
Remember Mario Hollins?
Oh, I do. Wow.
Yeah.
In the Elvis
He's in the fashion. Mario Hollins is in the fashion industry now. He was taking classes, really? I think, when he was playing. Yeah.
Oh, good for you, dude. Keep at it. Oh, yeah. That's so cool. Wow. What a name. Yes. I remember Mario Hollins.
Now we can stop the podcast.
Wow. Yes. Now we can. 2014 Mario Hollins. Okay. Great. Hey, baseball is back and so are we. Thank you all as we embark on this third season. I can't thank everybody enough. I'm feeling very grateful every time we do one of these. So we'll keep it rolling. Camp has only just begun. We are obviously firing on all cylinders with the best name dropping and guy remembering we can possibly do. It's only downhill from here. Which I've always kind of wondered about that saying. Does that mean if it's downhill, it's supposed to go down in quality, but if it's easier to go down,
you're picking up speed.
Yeah. You know what? Exactly. That's a paradox. All right. I hope you enjoyed these last 45 minutes. I know we did. We'll be back with you again soon. We'll check in again as things progress, as games get closer and things start taking shape, as some of these races evolve, and hopefully maybe a little more intrigue comes in. We'll see how things go. Go read Matt's stuff on The Athletic. We've mentioned a number of the stories that he's published over the last week or two. They are all worth your time, as always. Lots of fun facts and figures. Good stuff on the Wheeler extension, obviously. And we'll have to keep an eye out for, we touched on this briefly last check-in, but I think the last thing outstanding right now is Alec Bohm's arbitration hearing, which I think is happening this week.
It is this week.
Yeah, so we'll see how that goes. But that's basically it. Then everybody reports, everybody works out, and we start getting the games. Oh, I'm so excited. So we'll see you all again soon. It will not be long. For Matt, I am Paul, and we'll talk to you then.